The Public News Service Daily Newscast, February the 22nd, 2021. I'm Mike Clifford. Young climate activists are trying to get Minnesota lawmakers to pay closer attention to their concerns about the environment. Mike Mullen reports they've played a role in drafting a bill requiring climate justice to be taught in the classroom.
The legislation was drafted with the input from the Youth Environmental Activist Network, which is tied to the Minnesota-based group Climate Generation. The measure calls on schools to provide more comprehensive curriculum on climate change with socioeconomic factors as a key focus. Network member Maya Hidalgo is a junior at Jefferson High School in Bloomington. She hopes it can open the eyes of younger students and how they can play a role in the movement.
It will give a background on like the history of climate change and climate injustices and what solutions there are, as well as employment opportunities.
The proposal calls on the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency to assist with developing resources for school districts to use. The legislation, which would cover grades 1 through 12, has been introduced in both the House and Senate, but it's unclear yet if either version will get a committee hearing. It's also not clear yet if the bill faces any opposition.
By the way, the push to get that bill heard coincides with the group's Youth Climate Justice Summit, which will be held on Tuesday and Wednesday this week. Republicans by double-digit margins say they are willing to ditch their party to follow former President Donald Trump if he breaks out on his own. That from the New York Post. They report members of the GOP by 46% to 27% said they would put the Republican Party in the rearview mirror if Trump creates his own. The results come from a USA Today Suffolk University poll. And judicial independence organizations celebrating a temporary victory, at least, now that a proposed amendment to the Pennsylvania state constitution will not be on the ballot in the May primary.
HB 38 would create judicial districts drawn by state legislators and impose residency requirements for the election of appellate court judges. Republican lawmakers who introduced the amendment say it would give different regions of the state more representation on the state Supreme Court. But according to Deborah Gross, CEO of Pennsylvanians for Modern Courts, it would make judges who currently are selected in statewide elections less independent and more like state legislators who need to be responsive to a local electorate.
The appellate court judges determine the law applicable to all Pennsylvania citizens. They don't take one geographic area into consideration when they are making their decision.
The full House and Senate needed to pass HB 38 last week for it to appear on the May ballot, but it did not come up for a vote. If passed later this year, it will be on the ballot in November. I'm Andrea Sears reporting.
This is PMS. Advocates for postal banking say having more financial services available at U.S. Postal Service locations could help the nation make a more equitable recovery from the COVID-19 economic crisis. Here's Lily Polke.
More than 12 million people, or 6% of American adults, don't have a bank account. Another 16% aren't underbanked. They do have a bank account, but also use money orders, check cashing services, payday loans, or tax credit advances. Porter McConnell, with Take on Wall Street, says these alternative financial services often can be predatory or charge exorbitantly high rates. She says postal banking could fill a crucial gap.
It's infrastructure that's already there. It's a very skilled workforce. And the universal service mandate of the post office means that everybody gets to be served by the post office.
14% of Black residents and 11% of Latino residents are unbanked, compared with just 4% of Caucasians. McConnell notes that big Wall Street banks have often closed branches in rural or low-income communities, leaving behind banking deserts.
In California, state lawmakers there proposed a bill to ban fracking last week, but one city, Culver City, already has taken a big step in that direction.
In October, the city council approved a resolution to wind down drilling within 5 years. Staff are working on an ordinance now. The city hosts 10% of the Inglewood oil field, which has been drilling for about 100 years. Former Mayor Megan Solly Wells says neighbors are troubled by reports of miscarriages and cancer diagnoses in parts of the city.
Cancer over cancer over cancer in the communities closest to the oil field. We have a ton of anecdotal stories of people in our community who look at the pollution that's happening at the oil field site as the culprit.
I'm Suzanne Potter.
Finally, Eric Gladys tells us Wyoming lawmakers are considering a bill that would cut severance taxes paid by oil and gas companies from 6% all the way down to 3%.
Proponents argue the move will attract new drilling to the state as the industry rebounds from last year's oil price crash. State Senator Cale Case of Lander agrees that the mineral industry is an important partner, but says as the owners of the minerals, now is not the time to give up more of the state's share of revenues. According to the bill's fiscal note, the state stands to lose $13.5 million annually.
Our change in taxes won't make any difference. This bill just leaves money on the table, and I really don't believe, and our studies that we've done show that it won't change future behavior.
HB 11 would cut the state's share of revenues when prices climb above $45 a barrel. This is Mike Clifford for Public News Service, member and listener-supported, heard on radio stations big and small, and online at publicnewsservice.org.